I don't know where other people like to work, but I like to try and keep things kind of fresh when I've got stuff to do. Sometimes I work at home and sometimes I go down to a local cafe, you know, just kind of for a change of scenery. But I'm often spending quite a lot of time on trying to get worksheets made or get presentations made or get videos done or something like that. At the weekend, I headed down to a little local cafe pastry shop just down the road, and I was working on the notes for the next podcast episode. I live on a little tiny tropical island in the southern hemisphere, and at this time of year, it's really hot. Summer's still pretty much in full swing, even in March. So, early in the morning, it's kind of bearable. The temperature's kind of manageable. So I decided that I would put up with the noise and construction work and traffic noise that was going on across the road, and I decided to sit outside of the cafe, kind of just soak in the morning air. Honestly, it was a pretty good start of the day. Even the noise didn't really bother me. If you're the kind of person that devotes quite a lot of time to your content, you know, you want to sit there on evenings and weekends and make sure that your presentation is just right or your worksheet looks pretty good or your video looks really nice, then hopefully you're going to find this episode pretty useful. This one's focusing on videos. This is 7 ways to make your education videos look more professional. This is EdTech Source, the pedagogy podcast that focuses on all things EdTech, hosted by me, Alex Nixon. Hundreds of thousands of educators are out there every day making learning and revision videos for their students, and all are making those videos to different levels of professionalism. And by professionalism, I'm talking about that perceived production value. And I say perceived because higher production value doesn't necessarily cost any money. A lot of educators watch someone else's video and want to know how can they give their own videos that extra sort of polished touch, how they can make them look more attractive and interesting to their students and possibly to other students around the world if you're publishing them online. Before you delve into these steps, you've got to ask yourself, what is the goal for my videos? If your goal is to share your videos online, grow a global audience over time, then you should definitely implement the steps that I recommend here. If you're making videos that you hope will be reusable for years to come, something that you're going to repeat with each class every time the course repeats itself, then again, make these as professional as possible. You know, ramp up that quality in them. Obviously, if you're hoping to make videos sort of every evening, ready for your class the next day, you want to get loads of content out there, maybe it's only going to be shared with this one group, then of course, spending hours and hours and hours and investing in getting your videos to be this sort of extra little bit of high quality, then maybe that's not your main priority. However, if you have decided that you want to give your videos that extra polished touch, then these 7 steps will definitely get you in the right direction. Number 1 is get an external microphone. Number 2, photograph and film everything. Number 3, edit. Number 4, get some branding and identity. Number 5, choose a color palette. Number 6, choose fonts. And number 7, practice. Number 1, get an external microphone. This is consistently overlooked, and there's a reason I'm putting this at number 1. This truly is the most important step you can make in improving your videos. The paradox is that most people don't notice good audio quality, but they do notice bad audio, and there's no getting around it. That little microphone that's in your laptop is low quality. The rule in video is simple. If no one notices the audio, it means the audio is really good. A good microphone reproduces the sound of your voice more accurately, meaning the viewer focuses on the words being said, rather than getting distracted by how it sounds, or often how bad it sounds. Before I make recommendations about which microphones, there is a word of warning that goes with it. Be wary of what you search for online. If you type something like, which microphone is best for me, you'll need a serious budget for the recommendations that you get. Honestly, professional audio is a very expensive world where most people who make recommendations consider anything less than professional studio quality to be virtually unusable. And professional microphones sell for thousands of pounds and into tens of thousands. So when people refer to a microphone as affordable, honestly, they're using that term a little bit differently to the way you and I might. So here are the recommendations. And keep in mind that the main benefit of an external microphone is that you can get close to it. The closer you are to it, the louder your voice will be relative to any background noise, and that background noise includes things like the nasty echo reverb of the sound in your room, and that's one of the biggest causes of low audio quality. If you're trying to do this on a near zero budget, then consider getting a headset with the microphone attached, like kind of airline pilot style. Alternatively, you could get something called a lavalier microphone, and that's the type of thing that you see clipped onto newscasters' ties or lapels, that, you know, the really, really small microphones. You could choose either one of these options, and it costs somewhere in the region of £20, $30 on Amazon. Of the two, the lavalier microphone will probably give you the best results in terms of audio quality. In my experience, some of those headsets tend to have a bit of a telephone sound to them, but it really does depend on the brand, so that's not a hard and fast rule. Also, keep in mind that if you're filming yourself, as opposed to just, you know, narrating a PowerPoint where you wouldn't be seen, if you're filming yourself, the lavalier microphone is a tiny little thing and it goes virtually unnoticed, whereas the headset's obviously attached to you, so it stands out quite a lot. As I'm going through these different microphones, I've got some photos of them in the show notes, so if you want to kind of get a bit of an idea of what's out there and get a bit of a clearer picture, you can check out the show notes for this episode. You'll find the show notes at scienceonline.com/edtechsource, and you just navigate towards this episode, which is 7 ways to make your education videos look more professional. If you're willing to spend a little bit more money on microphones, you'll get a big jump in quality if you're willing to spend somewhere around that £60 sort of, what's that, about $90 sort of price range. For this, you could get a very basic dynamic microphone, and some of these dynamic microphones have got a USB connection. It doesn't apply to all of them, they don't come with that as a standard, but there are some out there for quite a reasonable price. And that makes it really easy to connect up to your computer without getting any extra equipment, and that keeps the budget down. If you go down this line, honestly, you will be impressed with the improvement in sound. The most common dynamic microphones that you see are those basic handheld ones that you see pop stars using on stage. Dynamic microphones are usually really good at focusing on the thing that's right in front of them, i.e. your voice, and eliminating things that are at either side. And obviously it's the room echoes and the fans and people's footsteps outside the room. Those are the things that will tend to come in at the side. So this minimizes that and tends to give a much more clean reproduction of the narration that you want to present. There are also condenser microphones, which are slightly bigger. They're generally always silver coloured, and you'll see them if you've ever seen anyone recording in a professional recording studio. Condenser microphones tend to require more accessories, and that does end up adding to the price quite a lot. And they also do pick up a little bit more in terms of background noise. If you do your own research, you might find people describing condenser microphones as being slightly higher quality. But that actually kind of depends on their purpose. Big condenser microphones do tend to capture sounds a lot more accurately, which I guess means they're higher quality. But they also tend to capture everything, which means they'll probably also capture bits of the background noise of the room that they're in, which also means that for this purpose, maybe they're a bit lower quality. Like I said, it depends on the purpose. Personally, I'd recommend the dynamic microphone option if you can afford it, if you can spend a little bit of money on it, and go for the lavalier microphone if you want to keep it super cheap. Also notice that lavalier microphones are a lot smaller, so they're a lot more portable. If you're likely to go backwards and forwards from home to work, where you might sometimes narrate a video at school, sometimes you might narrate one at home, then maybe the lavalier microphone is a much easier option for you. I would only go for the condenser mic if you've spoke to somebody who's in the know about this stuff and they've recommended it for you personally and they think it'll work for what you need. If you need a bit more info on that, try searching online for something like the best microphone for beginner podcasters. The types of microphones that are made for that purpose are generally the most appropriate thing for narrating presentations, especially if you're looking for something that kind of bit more budget friendly. Excuse me, I'm just having my coffee. Number two is photograph and film everything. You may intend to create educational videos that involve someone or something being filmed, or you might intend to just use a PowerPoint or Keynote presentation and narrate those. Either way, having supplementary footage or even just photographs really adds to the character of the videos. As a biology and environmental subjects teacher, I focus a lot on nature and wildlife in the extra footage that I take. I don't start out with a plan to film something specific or use a bit of footage that I take in a specific video, but I will take the video footage, store it on my laptop, and maybe months later down the line, something comes up where that footage would be really useful. A good example was, I was in London a while back and I took some footage of the crowds walking across a bridge. And a few months later, I did a video where I had to discuss overpopulation. So I used that little bit of footage just for a couple of seconds where it had a crowd in it, and that nicely kind of illustrated what I was saying. It wasn't essential, but it did add to that sort of, that bit of character, that little bit of polish to the video. If you do this, and I would recommend that you do, don't get too fixated on what you film and what you photograph. Just try and shoot anything and everything that looks interesting. The thing is, you'd be amazed how often these random shots actually turn out to be relevant in the future, even if you don't have a specific plan for them when you're filming them. And don't get too fixated on the idea of always having an expensive camera. Maybe you do have a nice camera, maybe you've got a digital SLR and it can take video and you know that it's got that really nice pristine feel about it. I'm not saying that you've got to try and carry this with you everywhere you go, not unless you really want to and you're the sort of person that does that anyway. The truth is that modern smartphones do a really good job of shooting video these days. Some of them can even do it in 4K resolution. Actually, 4K resolution is becoming fairly standard. And the advantage of having a smartphone is it's always with you. So you don't have to plan to go out and take your stock footage. It's just whenever you see an opportunity, just go with it. Number three is edit. And here I'm really kind of talking about cutting and editing your footage so you can stick different bits in different places. Honestly, there's no real way around this. If you want your videos to look good, then you need a little bit of editing software so that you can cut and stick things in your videos into the right places. Even if you're only using a narrated PowerPoint or Keynote presentation with no additional footage, this is a really useful skill to employ. First off, you need to remove that 1 or 2 seconds at the start and end of the video. You know that bit where you pressed record and then you waited to check that it was working and then you cleared your throat and then you started speaking. What's more, there might be little bits throughout the presentation where you possibly fumbled over the words a little or you left a long pause before continuing to the next piece while you were kind of thinking about what you wanted to say on the next slide. Being able to remove those little sections, that odd second or two here and there, really improves the flow of your video and ultimately improves that sort of perceived production value in it. Once you know how to edit video, it's really easy to start adding those extra little bits of footage that I mentioned. You might not think it's worth it or maybe think it's just making things more complicated, but it doesn't take long to add things in if you've got good software. It's not a huge time commitment to do this. A useful thing to note here at this point is that there are places where you can get stock footage that's copyright free and also free financially, which means if there's something in particular that you want, you haven't had an opportunity to film it yourself or collect that footage, you can go and find this stuff online. Try pexels.com, P-E-X-E-L-S.com. I've mentioned that in a previous episode when I was talking about getting a hold of photos for your presentations. But they've also got a good collection of videos as well. It is quite a big collection. It's all free to use, and you can download it and use it for your own videos, and there's no copyright involved. Most of the time when you download any videos from YouTube or wherever you might be able to download them from, it belongs to somebody else. You can't just stick them in your own video without asking for permission. Well, this is a really convenient place to get all of that stuff without worrying about plagiarism, copyright restrictions, all that kind of thing. In terms of software, there's quite a lot to choose from, and there are quite a wide range of there's quite a range of price tags to go with it. For Mac, iMovie does the basics, and it is honestly very basic, but it's free, and it will allow you to cut and stick different things into different places. Filmora, which is F-I-L-M-O-R-A, is a Windows Movie editor. I haven't used it myself, so I can't really speak for it, but it does seem to have the basic features, and it's quite reasonably priced. It costs $40 per year if you want to have like an annual subscription, or you could pay $60 and you get a lifetime usage out of it for that. If you want something more full-featured, then honestly, it will cost you quite a lot. Adobe Premiere Pro is one of the industry standards and definitely something that I would recommend if you plan to start taking video editing really seriously. It is a very, very good investment. As a teacher, you can get an education license for this, and that costs $20 per month. But that includes a bundle of other apps like Photoshop and things like that as well. When you start working with editing tools, you'll probably find yourself experimenting with things like background music, sound effects, and even processing your own voice to make it sound louder and clearer. That's all kind of another discussion for another day. However, the point I'm trying to make is that if you invest in some slightly more advanced editors, then you'll probably find yourself learning to use some of these tools as you go along. It definitely will improve the quality of your videos if you're willing to invest in it. In some schools, depending on the kind of budget that they've got, it is possible that your school might be willing to invest in that themselves. $20 a month is, I mean, it depends on the school. That is a lot of money for some schools. For others, it's not so much. It might be worth asking, and then you would get access to that yourself without actually paying for it yourself, and then it can be used as an educational tool with your students as well. So that's something to think about. One final point on editing is that it allows you to easily add in your logo and maybe your theme music if you have some, that, you know, you can add that at the sort of the start and the end of each video. That leads nicely on to point number four. Number four is to get some branding and identity. There are a lot of aspects to building a brand. Like I said, things like theme music is one of them if you've got access to that, if you've got access to someone who can make it for you or if you're able to make it yourself. But one of the most important points, in my opinion, is a name and a logo. I played around a lot with different names before I settled on Science Source, and I'm quite happy with it. You know, it's like that play on words. Source is spelled like ketchup, but it's also a source for learning materials. It's kind of simple, it's kind of catchy, it works for me. I've noticed a lot of teachers tend to go down the line of having their name in the title of their blog or YouTube channel. For example, something like Mrs. Smith's History Blog is quite a common theme. There's nothing wrong with that at all. You know, it kind of says what it is, it's to the point. But the problem is, it's not entirely memorable. You don't need to set out to make a memorable name for your site or channel if you don't want to, but if you hope to share your content beyond just your own students, you might want to consider something a little bit more catchy. And, you know, that does tend to give it that slightly more professional feel. As for the logo, that's a little bit tricky. If you know graphic design yourself, do your own. But if you don't, then don't do it yourself. I would recommend finding someone who does. I tried a few ideas for my own logo, and being quite inexperienced, I made some really awful designs before I came up with the red and green circle design that I really like. Fortunately, I do know my way around Photoshop, and I know basic principles of design, like how to use ratios that are kind of pleasing to the eye and that kind of thing. So while it did take a few attempts, because I'm not a professional at this, I was able to make my own. But if you're not experienced in that, it's not easy to create a good logo, so try and find someone who might be able to do that for you. Anyway, the point is, it's quite important to have some kind of a logo so that it gives your videos that recognizable trait, something that people will see, and if they see a second video, they kind of recognize the standard. And while they also recognize that standard, it's really good to have that sort of something at the very beginning of your video. It doesn't have to be a substantial intro with credits and stuff flying around and, you know, super high quality professional stuff, but it will increase the professionalism if there's just a flash of the logo right at the beginning and then onto your content. It just gives that nice little sort of, it's perceived production value. It does look that little bit nicer. Number five, choose a color palette. This is really overlooked, but it does make a big difference to the look of your videos as a whole. If you choose a set of colours and stick to them, it'll give a certain amount of consistency within each presentation, and it also helps your videos look more recognisable if a person watches several of them. There's a way of going about this. To choose your colours, just start with any one colour that you want. You know, just choose your favourite colour. It doesn't matter, but choose one colour that you like. Then choose its complementary colour. If you don't know what that is, you can use a colour wheel to show you. Just Google colour wheel and all you have to do is look at the colour that you have chosen, your favourite colour, and at the opposite place on the colour wheel, that is its complementary colour. If you don't really know what I'm talking about, just Google complementary colours and it'll come up with a list of things that work well with other things. For example, if your favourite colour is blue, orange works really nice with that, so orange would be your second colour. Purple looks really good with yellow, green works really well with red, that sort of thing. If you use that method, you've now got two colours that you can stick with, and you can use those for the majority of texts, maybe your text box fill colours, slide backgrounds, all that kind of thing. Next, choose an equivalent for white and black. You will need these at some point. Now, you could simply choose plain white and plain black, but it's my opinion, at least, that it looks better if you use something slightly original because it makes your work look that bit original. A very dark grey is better than jet black, for example, and maybe a very light cream colour is better than just using white. You might not plan to use these light and dark colours in your presentations, but honestly, you definitely will use them. Often you have an image and you need to have a light colour to contrast against it. Imagine you've got an image as the background of your slide. Now, you've chosen your main two colours. You try both of them and they blend in too much with the image that you've got there. Then you would decide, okay, well, I need to use my light colour here. Maybe I would use white or whatever light colour you've chosen. Sometimes you might use the main colour that you've chosen for your heading. You use your complementary colour as the subheading, and then you just want something really simple for the main body text. That's when your black-ish colour would come in handy. Next, number six, choose fonts. Fonts used consistently add more character and originality to presentations, and the right choice will definitely make your videos look more professional. But you've got to be really careful about how you choose these. In my opinion, when it comes to choosing fonts, you've got two real options. Option number one is keep it really simple. Use something like Arial that is already installed on your computer and use it consistently. Your second choice is to find something more original, but find it online. The alternative to these, which I personally don't consider an option, is to use some of the other fancy fonts that are already installed on your laptop. Things like Comic Sans or Papyrus. These fonts are overused, so much so that they're cliche. They are a really good way to make your presentations and videos look amateurish. So honestly, steer clear of them. If you've never downloaded fonts or installed fonts before, then I would recommend using Google Fonts. You can find that at fonts.google.com. Google Fonts have got a really big range to choose from, and they're open source, which means you don't have to pay for them, and you can pretty much use them for whatever you want. They're primarily designed for use on web pages, using a little bit of coding, but when you click on them, if you look carefully in the top corner, you can see a little download button, and that'll let it be installed on your computer. From there, you can choose them just as you would choose any other font. Number seven, I'm sure this goes without saying, but practice is one of the most significant things in making your videos look more professional. There is absolutely no substitute for practicing and gaining your own experience. The more you do it, the more you'll learn what works for you. Because honestly, there is no one size fits all for making good content. I've given you some tips that I think are important and that have worked for me. But the more practice you gain, the more you will realize what is important for you. Remember that you don't necessarily need to make your videos more professional. What you need to do is make them high quality, and that means high educational quality rather than having high perceived production value. As a professional educator, your videos are probably already of a very, very high educational quality. Nonetheless, if you do hope to give your videos that polished touch, these 7 steps will certainly get you heading in the right direction and help increase your global audience size, if that's a goal for your videos. You've been listening to EdTech Source, the pedagogy podcast that focuses on all things EdTech, hosted by me, Alex Nixon. If you want to get more information, get show notes, get subscribe links, all that kind of thing, you will find it at sciencesourceonline.com/EdTech Source. You can also follow me on Twitter using @science_source. And remember, all of those sources are spelled like ketchup. Have a great week, everyone.